G'day, and thanks for joining us for this week's Two Ticks Town Talk, a segment of the Australia Talks podcast. I'm DK.
And I'm RD.
Please enjoy this segment from the regular podcast.
Right. This week, for our Two Ticks Town Talk, we head to Bombala in New South Wales. So Bombala is a small rural centre in the southeast corner of New South Wales, right down on the southeast corner, on the Monaro Highway between Cooma and Cairn River. Agricultural area around the town's mixture of fine wool sheep, beef cattle, and timber, and the local rivers are recognised as some of the state's best trout fishing destinations and a home to substantial communities of platypuses. Principal industries of the area include grazing and timber and tourism, with specialty industries of meat rabbits, lavender, and herb growing. And it's probable that Bombala is a word for the Ngarrigu Aborigines who lived in the area prior to European settlement. And that can be translated as a place where the waters meet. It's got a population of just under 2,000, or just under 1,900, 1,892. A couple of factoids about the town. 1903, Bombala was proposed by King O'Malley as a possible site for the new federal capital because it was seen as being halfway between Melbourne and Sydney. Obviously, that ended up going to Canberra. But, yeah, Bombala was in the running. The town claims that the local rivers have the highest density of platypus in Australia, and still, even though the creatures are very shy and usually only spotted at dawn and dusk, just to make them challenging and capable of staying underwater for 14 minutes, they are still confident of seeing them and have a viewing platform at the local platypus reserve. There's also the Holy Transfiguration Monastery, which is a male monastic community of the Russian Orthodox Church abroad, which was founded there in 1982 and presided over by Abbot Hiram Monk Sergius. And it's in the valley nearby McLachlan River. It's just was interesting choice for, like, it just sort of surprised me that it was such a specific denomination there. But I don't have much more information on that one. That was just a factoid. On January 15th, 2022, a tornado touchdown, yeah, in the vicinity of the town. I sort of was a little bit dubious. Looked at the video of it, and now it wasn't huge, but it was definitely a tornado.
We do have them here in Australia. They're very uncommon. They're not nowhere near as big as the ones in the States.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Bloody hell, I see those monsters come along, and I think, oh, God, thank God we don't have them here. That's just... That would be a nightmare. So now, to find out what caught my eye about Bombala, I'll need to catch your ear. So I've given DK an audio file to see if he can guess what got my attention about Bombala. So I'll get him to listen to it now. And while he's listening to it, I'm going to play it for you listeners now too, to see if you can guess what it is. So I'll let DK have a listen to that.
Yeah, it sounds like Morse code, right? I'm not that familiar with Norse code, so I couldn't tell you what the sign is, but it's obviously quite
impressed
short.
If you were.
It's quite short, but I'm very curious as to what the deal is with this little town making that sort of code.
Well,
I can't even speculate what it is. Maybe something to do with like the SES or some sort of emergency services in the area would be my guess.
I reckon once we start into it, you're going to know exactly what we're talking about because of what I'll go into. Just for your the information, that is Morse code that spells out Bombala.
Ah!
So, yeah, I would have been mightily impressed if your Morse code was that good. The reason why I popped that little Morse code in there was on December 13th, 1962, Bombala Post Office received the last telegram to be transmitted using Morse code telegraphy in New South Wales. And the reason why I reckon you're going to have a feel for why this is of interest was because in our Two Ticks Town Talk, we often mention the old telegraph system in Australia.
And yes.
Yeah, exactly. And Bombala's place in its history, I thought, well, that's a good excuse to discuss it in some more depth. So that's where it came from. And that's what sort of caught my eye about Bombala. You know, for all the places that if you'd have asked me to guess, I would have thought, oh, yeah, somewhere in Sydney or, you know, something like that would have been the last one. But no, it was Bombala. So,
wow.
Yeah. The Wireless Institute of Australia has a story of the last Morse code telegram. So it wasn't the last telegram, but it was the last telegram using Morse code. On December 13th, 1962, the last telegram and its reply was sent by Morse code in New South Wales. At the time, in a 50th anniversary reenactment, former telegraph operator Phil McGrath travelled to Bombala to send and receive a souvenir telegram to mark the occasion. At the time, Mr. McGrath sat at the sounding box and typewriter and received what was originally meant to be that all-important final message. So the final message at the time, which they used for the reenactment, given what it was, it read, "This telegram from Sydney to Bombala is the last message which will be sent by Morse in New South Wales, concluding 104 years of operation. Henceforth, telegrams to and from Bombala, like all other offices in this state, will be transmitted through the teleprinter perforator switching system, TRESS." And that's basically instead of them using the Morse code keys, they type it in using a QWERTY keyboard. But then that was going to be sort of the final message. And this was a bit bloody difficult to find. I kept seeing this, last telegram in Bombala, last telegram there.
What did it say?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think just bloody, surely you can tell me what it said. So, look, thankfully the Wireless Institute of Australia had that. But the postmaster at the time, Bombala's postmaster, Stan Blyton, actually sent a 50-word reply that read, "My privilege, personally transmit last message from last Morse station, New South Wales. Key being forwarded, you relic was in use in inimitable 1919, where I joined service, remained there in use till station closed in 1960. Behalf old telegraphist and Morse code, old telegraphist and Morse operators, we bow to progress." So I personally consider that is the last telegram, not the one that was officially done.
Yeah, that I feel like the reply counts, doesn't it?
Bloody oath.
Yeah, it should. It should count.
Well, I'm going to count it, and here on Australia Talks, we are going to count it because
that's it. You've heard it here first.
yeah, exactly. So, look, it gave a lead into the Morse code telegraphy. So, look, let's go a little bit of its history because that was it's just something that crops up so often, and we can refer back to this later on in other episodes when it comes up. So, a bit of detail. Morse telegraphy was introduced to Australia in 1854, and that was only 10 years after Samuel Morse had transmitted the words, "What God has wrought," over a line between Washington and Baltimore. And Australia's first line ran from Melbourne to Williamstown in Victoria. That was significant to me because Australia, again, was a relatively early adopter of a technology. I mean, 10 years is not a hell of a long time for basic bureaucrats to get their bum into order, into gear, and say, yep, we need to do that. So it caught their attention. So Australia was a relatively early adopter of electrical telegraph technology in the middle of the 19th century, despite its low population densities and the difficult conditions sometimes encountered in laying lines. From 1858 onwards, the major capitals were progressively linked, culminating with the addition of Perth in 1877. When you hear 18 in front of these numbers, it's a long time ago. And it is, sorry, it seems like a long time ago, and it is a long time ago. But to give you an idea of what an advanced telegraph system was, here's some details about what happened in Victoria. So look, there were similar developments in other states, but Victoria is a good all-round example. And it was also the first state in Australia to do so in 1854. So in Victoria, the first telegraph line, which was sponsored by the Victorian government, was erected between Melbourne and Williamstown in 1853 and 1854 by a bloke called Samuel McGowan, who is a recently immigrated Canadian telegrapher. The line there was 17 kilometres, 11 miles, and went into operation in 1954. As I said, less than 10 years after the first public telegraph line, 4,000 telegrams were sent. 4,000 telegrams were dispatched in the first year. When the line was extended to Geelong in December 1854, the first message transmitted to Melbourne brought news of the Eureka Stockade, which is a nice little bit of Australian history to come across on that. Connections to Queenscliff and Port Melbourne in 1855 provided notice of ships entering the harbour and arriving at port. Connections to the gold mining centres of Ballarat and Bendigo were both completed in 56, and by 1857, Victoria had been extensively networked by telegraph lines, including a line reaching to Portland near the South Australian state border. By 1867, which wasn't that long after it started, there were 1,676 miles, so just shy of 2,700 kilometres, of line within Victoria, handling 122,138 messages. Now, given the population, that's a huge amount.
That's what the gold rush gets, yeah?
Exactly right.
It's a massive engineering undertaking to build something like that. And I think at one point Melbourne was the wealthiest city in the world per capita or something like that. So obviously they put that money to good use. It's a shame we can't necessarily say the same thing today.
Oh, yes, exactly. Oh, my heart warms to hear you say that. And it's interesting you say that about the level of engineering, because look, naturally enough, there was a strong drive to connect Australia to the rest of the world, because this thing was just I suppose it's one of those things that solved itself. So look, as I said, that was just a concentration on Victoria. All the other states were doing similar things. So there's competition between these states to connect to overseas. That was fierce competition both from the state governments and the various companies vying for the business. As you would imagine, it was no different to what it is nowadays when you've got a big infrastructure project. South Australia eventually outbid Queensland and one of the great engineering feats of 19th century Australia, and probably the most significant milestone in the history of telegraphy in Australia, was built, and that was the Overland Telegraph. Now, this was impressive. There's a bloke, John McDougall Stewart, who'd been previously commissioned to explore a remote outback in Northern Australia, because this is when Northern Territory, today's Northern Territory, was part of South Australia.
Which is just so weird to think. South Australia was all most of the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he had a couple of cracks at the hitting the northern coast and eventually got there in 1862. And that was despite fears before the expedition that there were going to be vast inland seas that may block a route. And even though it was an extreme route, a bloody oath is extreme up there, they found a path. So they get a put a contract out in 1870, and following immense physical hardship and considerable logistical challenge, the Overland Telegraph that ran from Port Augusta to Port Darwin was completed on 22nd of August 1872, which again, not that long after the introduction to telegraphy in Australia of 1854. I mean, that's only, what are they, I'm blanking on, is that 18? 72 minus 54, that's 18, isn't it?
That,
have I stuffed that up?
You're putting me on the spot here now.
we'll edit this out afterwards, and I'll just flick it to you, and you'll say immediately, "Yes, of course it is."
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah. People say, "God, that bloody Darwin DK, quick on the maths." That's not that long. 18 years. So, to build the line to Darwin, 36,000 poles were used to close the nearly 3,000-kilometre gap. And the Australian Overland Telegraph was used for sending messages between Darwin and Adelaide. When it was the reason why that was so important was it allowed fast communications between Australia and the rest of the world, because it was linked to a submarine cable going from Java to Darwin. So one of the beauties of these things is once you actually have a link to part of the network, you've got a link to the whole of the network.
Yeah.
Similar to the internet today. I mean, it's that exactly, not exactly, but it's a very similar thing. So that meant that the communication time with Europe dropped from months to hours, and it meant Australia was no longer so isolated from the rest of the world. It's a really significant step in the Australia joining the rest of the world in a communication sense. So, yeah, not surprised that they gave it such a kudos as an engineering thing. And then they did that was north-south to bring WA into the fold. They put up the east-west telegraph. So in 1874, the South and Western Australian legislators voted for some money to construct Port Augusta to Albany, which allowed it was a colony then of WA, to connect to the actual Overland Telegraph and therefore to the rest of the world via the undersea cables to Indonesia and beyond.
That's still such a massive distance.
Isn't it?
You think about Western Australia and Perth, is almost like an island, really. Like, it's so far away. It's so isolated. Albany is not even Perth. You've still got several hundred kilometres after that. But that's got to be 2,000 kilometres worth of telegraph lines, which is just a massive amount of work to do, to put How many poles? You got to cut down entire forests to get enough friggin' telegraph poles to.
Oh,
it would have been a huge. But again, at the same time, you know, obviously they're stopping along the way. So some of these little towns, which, you know, as we've spoken about, as sort of is the topic of this week's Two Ticks Down Talk, is these massive infrastructure projects kind of put some of these places on the map as a result.
You absolutely nailed it, DK. That's it. Exactly what happened. And particularly in the early days, you had to have areas where there were sort of repeaters and people were sort of serving as the hub. And because it had the telegraph station there, it became a source of information. And therefore, once it becomes a source of information, it becomes a source of trade. And it attracts population, it attracts business, and as you correctly said, it's part of so many of the towns that we've looked at around Australia. It was interesting on this one. It sort of drove that home to me in a way that was more sort of significant when I've just mentioned it before. So yeah, look, there was the social impact. So that, yeah, look, the idea of a telegraph system seems quaint now, but it had massive social impact in a similar way to the internet and the World Wide Web and mobile phones. The largest customers by far were government, business, and the press. So before the telegraph, news and mail could take 3 months to reach England.
Wow.
Yeah, 3 months. Reduced that to 7 hours. Imagine that.
Wow. Imagine a difference.
Oh, bloody oath. Yeah, imagine you're a business person and you're thinking, well, did my goods arrive? Are my goods on the way? You know, am I going to have a sunk ship? Am I going to actually be getting that new, those new supplies in? It doesn't take many trips at 3 months where you've essentially got a year to do some business. And all of a sudden, in a couple of days, you can have that information.
It's so wild because it's so opposite to how we run our world now. You know, it's like borderline instantaneous information everywhere all at once. You know, we whinge if our overnight express post delivery is delayed or something. That thinking about it like that, 3 months to send a letter, holy moly, that is just it's a different world.
It is a different world, so you can understand why it was a fundamental change in society. Business community, it increased their prosperity and wealth. City and country telegraph offices, as we just said, became centres of trade where orders were placed, banking was transacted, market information was exchanged. There was the administrative, scientific side. One of the things that telegraph system was used for was to keep the time of the nation. So time signals were transmitted.
Of course,
transmitted to all telegraph stations in each colony at 1 o'clock each day, and weather observations were likewise transmitted back to the state capitals. So yeah, all those. Sometimes we're so used to seeing time. And we're so used to it. It's on your wrist, it's on your phone, it's up on the wall. But knowing the correct time and knowing that your time is coordinated with someone else's time 3,000 miles away can become so important in so many different situations. It's just one of those things that it's part of our life. But when you examine it a bit closer, you understand the importance of it. So, yeah. So towards the close of the 19th century, Australia had become one of the largest users of telegraph in the world. The usage continued to climb within Australia, peaking at 35 million messages per annum in 1945. which is it's a lot of bloody messages. I mean, yeah. even by today's standards, that's still a big figure. The telephone came in, and so look, thereafter the telephone continuously eroded the use of telegrams. Both because of like the price, like the relative price of it, and the network service improvements. And additionally, from 1954, teleprinters handled more and more traffic. So they were ones that would just sort of automatically communicate messages and didn't quite use the old style Morse code telegraphy system. So the one that we mentioned earlier, the automated switching system, where you could just type it into a keyboard, enhanced the utility of the teleprinters by allowing messages that were centrally directed to be automatically retransmitted to their final destination without the need for a human operator. So in other words, you could use a machine on one end, and all it had to do was talk to the machines all along the way, rather than have a human operator intervene and do the retransmission. So, yeah, like a lot of things humans do, it was a continual refinement and improvement.
And that's it. I mean, it goes the telegraph directly, you know, turned into basically the telephone system and the fax system. Yep. And now we have the internet. It's all kind of built on top of the previous previous ideas we had before, and literally the infrastructure. I'd imagine a lot of those old telegraph lines were turned into telephone lines at some point.
Yes, and if they weren't directly, certainly the laid out routes would be used for that. You know, they'd be upgraded for that. So by 1975, telegram usage had halved from its 1945 level. And then finally, in 1993, Australia Post discontinued its lettergram service, which consisted of postage delivery, telegrams in inverted commas by that stage, but they were delivered in the same manner, although they weren't actually transmitted over telegraph lines. They just had that old feeling. And that similar sort of layout, and you had to pay for. You're still sort of having to pay for each word, because I mean, it's before your time,
yeah.
But I'm old enough to remember my parents receiving these lettergrams, and I think there was a birthday for an auntie, and it was all very exciting because we had to go down to the post office and send her a lettergram, but you had to work out how you could express your sentiments as economically as possible, because I can't remember what it cost, but it was one of those things of every word cost you money, so you couldn't sort of faff about, but it was trying to strike that balance between let's be a little bit emotional and heartfelt, but let's also not like piss the money up against the wall. So
you can still send telegrams, but they're basically a digital thing now. They call them a telegram, but they're not really a telegram. And the reason telegrams still exist is because there is, for certain industries, there is still like legal precedent that a telegram is like a legal document and things like that. So with certain business contracts and things like that, you can use a telegram instead of, say, like an email or something like that. So there kind of is this weird niche telegram. Like if you or listeners now, if you Google like send a telegram, you'll find a bunch of companies that will do it for you. They just print it out and send it in the post, like, and notarize it as a telegram. So it's not quite the same thing, but it's close.
Huh, didn't know that. That's interesting. I can understand there still being some legal hangovers.
But it's weird that it does still exist. It's especially because we have email, right? You like, why do you need a telegram if we can use email? There's receipts, you know, it's all time stamped, blah 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 blah. But yeah, for some parts of the world and things, it's telegram is still preferred. which is very weird.
So, look, it's amusing to think that the Morse code spelling out Bombala near the beginning of this segment was done using my phone connected to the internet requesting a file from a website based on what I import. So that while my creating the Morse code file and the original transmission of Morse code telegrams are worlds apart, there is a commonality that ties them together, which I sort of find quite interesting, and it makes me wonder what technology Australians will be using 150 years from now and how close or different it will be in concept to the last Morse code message sent to our Two Ticks Town of Bombala in New South Wales.
Very cool. What a step back in time this week was.